early on in my major league career, I would take a second to try to take it all in, but you can't really do that because you're kind of like in the mode of just like, I'm supposed to be here. I need to, you know, act like it. And so it was kind of like, yeah, of course we're throwing no hitter. Like that's what we're supposed to do, you know, not give up any hits.
Yeah, you heard that right. He did say throw a no hitter. Joe Biagini is back on the Experience podcast to share more stories about being a professional baseball player, from that infamous no-hitter to playing with famous faces to life on the road. I'm Elizabeth Pearson Garr, and my conversation with Joe had so much good stuff that I couldn't contain it into just one episode. If you haven't yet heard part one of our interview, you'll want to catch that as well. Here's part two of Joe Biagini.
Does it feel different from your experience to play at the different levels, college and minor league and major league? Is it still kind of just playing baseball with the team, or is the experience like grander in the major league?
It's hard to ignore the differences once you get to the highest level, where like things you do will just be on the news and you'll have all these connections and the celebrity things and the money and the, and it's just kind of like, we're in this weird like boys club where we can just get away with all this sort of stuff. And it's just kind of a little bit surreal. And then you kind of get used to it after a while. And then that's kind of surreal. If you step back and think about it, guys are talking about, well, I don't really like my other Ferrari, so I bought another one. And then I, you know, and this Rolex is a little bit, yeah, I don't like the color. I bought three of them just because I couldn't decide which one I liked, you know, stuff like that. And so that's kind of a little bit strange to be in that environment. And, like, it becomes normalized, and you were like, this isn't the way that most people live or are even supposed to live. So there's that aspect. But then, on the other hand, the funny part of is that, you know, it's just a bunch of grown children playing baseball. You know, I remember asking a guy in the dugout, he was, like, in his mid-30s or 37 or something like that. And I was like, does it feel weird that you're, like, putting on a baseball jersey for your job? You know, you're going out there grunting and throwing, you know, you know, and you're all, you got dirt on your pants and you're an adult. You know, you fell over. Like, people, adults don't fall, you know, they're not sliding and yelling and getting in a fight and
getting paid millions of dollars for it.
That's true. Yeah, that. But, you know, just like, you got a stain on your knee and it's like, you're supposed to, you know, and it's like, what are we doing? Like, we're, you know, you have kids and you're like, they're playing baseball, you're playing baseball, you know, so it's still like that too. So it's funny to have the dichotomy, you know, just the two things going on at the same time. And I think the varying levels are all similar in that way. The major league level just kind of jumps a couple rungs. But for me, it was always the same because I grew up not being very good. I was always just trying to figure out my mechanics. Like, I never would have made it just by natural ability or just, like, by the foundational physical mechanics that I produced naturally, like a lot of guys do. And I'm not saying that they didn't work as hard as me or they didn't deserve it or anything like that, but just that I had kind of a different experience where a lot of those guys were always the best players and they were throwing really hard when they were young or hitting the ball really far and all that stuff. And I wasn't. And so I kind of had a later development because I had to, like, figure out my mechanics. My dad was a big part of that, huge part of it. So for me, I was always just kind of a mechanicker instead of a pitcher or a baseball player. I remember a guy in my college told me, and this wasn't meant as a compliment. I kind of took it as a compliment, though. He said, Joe, you know, we're all baseball players. You're just a guy who plays baseball.
Oh.
You know, and I kind of agreed with him. Because I was like, yeah, I'm doing this because I'm pursuing something that I can try to be really good at. And if I want to play a sport that I love, I'll play golf, you know. And I hope it's not depressing anybody, but it's just the truth. It's just like, I like it, but what I love is the pursuit of something. And if I would have had that in some other thing, I would have done that. But this
that's
was just
so
what it
interesting
was.
To me. So in college, this guy's calling
finally,
you,
I said something interesting. That's good.
No, a guy who plays baseball, and then a year or two later, you have a major league contract. I mean, that's what was he thinking? Like, you're not a baseball player, and then I'm sure I don't know how many other guys from your college baseball team got contracts, but
Yeah, not too many on that team. I was probably supposed to be one of them that didn't. But, yeah, I wonder, you know, I'm sure he knew, and a lot of people were probably like that and probably thought similar of me, and I probably deserved it for a lot of it because I was all in my head and just kind of, you know, not very good. And so I would be interested to know what he thought when he saw, like, me, like, on the news or something like that. And part of that is part of the motivation for me, the pursuit of it, the wanting to be good, wanting to be the one that made it, the wanting to be the one that figured it out. So it's kind of motivating. I remember my dad tells this story of, like, a kid in Little League who was, like, the star in our Little League, and they would always talk about how their son's doing, and they would talk about the other guys on the team and where they're going to go to high school and where they're going to this and that. And then he said they would always turn and at the end and say, "How's Joey doing?" Like I was some kid that, you know, wasn't, you know, and so that motivated him and me to, like, we're going to figure it out. And as frustrating as it is to still be struggling with it, like, I'm always going to have that kind of major league experience to, and maybe future here, but I will always have that to kind of say, like, I was successful and I did it and reached that highest level, and that's something that I can be fake modest about for the rest of my life. So
it's incredible. So I'll be not fake modest for you.
All right.
So you were part of a no-hitter that I believe is in the Hall of Fame now, or your glove is in the Hall of Fame or something?
I think some items are in the Hall of Fame. I'm not sure which ones they are, but yeah.
Can you talk about that game and how that felt?
I can't. That's contractually...
Gag order.
That was... The memory I have of that is pretty convoluted because at the time I got traded to the Houston Astros. And that was right at the same time where I started to kind of have a lot of issues with pitching, with my mechanics and stuff like that, because I changed a bunch of stuff when I got there right away. They were known as, like, this team that was, and they were, able to, like, take pitchers and make them really good and figure out the analytics and use that to, like, improve people and change their game and all that. And so I really bought into it, and I dove headfirst into it and kind of didn't leave myself like a trail of breadcrumbs of where I was coming from. And so I kind of got lost, and, you know, those are all excuses or whatever. But it wasn't their fault. I don't blame them for trying it on whoever. And then if it works with somebody, then great. But for me, it kind of went too far, and so I kind of, like, had a bunch of issues coming out of that experience. So, you know, I wish I could kind of look back on it and enjoy it more purely and more fondly, but it was definitely like a frustrating time shortly after that. But that time was really funny. It was just kind of like, it was the first game that I pitched for the new team. The guy that I got traded with started that game. He pitched 6 innings of no-hitter, and then I pitched one of the innings later. I have to say my portion was probably the most difficult. 6 innings, but my 1 inning was, like, really, everybody was really, oh my gosh. And then it was such a whirlwind. We got there, the first game I pitched, and then all, you know, it was like crazy. All these good things happening so quickly that you're, you know, not able to, like, appreciate them when they come along, because it was, like, right away. And the other irony of being in that kind of position is that you can't really allow yourself to dwell in or kind of, like, sit in the moment of, like, what's going on and how crazy is this, because you're focused and you're, like, you can't just be out there. You know, once in a while I would take a second to do that in certain situations if I had gotten called back up, or if I, early on in my major league career, different things like that where I was kind of thinking about that more, I would take a second to try to take it all in. But you can't really do that because you're kind of, like, in the mode of just, like, I'm supposed to be here. I need to, you know, act like it. And so it was kind of like, yeah, of course we're throwing no-hitter. Like, that's what we're supposed to do, you know, not give up any hits. And so I remember they gave us a shadow box where they put the scorecard, they put a ball from the game, they put a picture of us and everything, which was kind of cool. Gave us some champagne, which it was so late. We were going to go out to dinner after, and we went to Denny's and brought the champagne in and put it down, and they're like, y'all can't have that in here. So it was kind of like...
really fancy cuisine.
Yeah, yeah. Denny's is my celebratory spot. And then, yeah, it was just like a weird thing. It was really cool to be a part of. And I hope, like, for the rest of my life, I can, like, look back on it and enjoy it. But, yeah, at the time, it was just like, that's crazy. Okay, game tomorrow. So...
I guess that's it. It's such a busy schedule, right, with baseball. You're not... Yeah. It's not like football. You've got a whole week to soak it in.
I imagine they might be a little busy as well. But the games, yes, there's a lot of games. And there's not a lot of off days, and you're traveling back and forth, and you're packing and then unpacking and then packing again. So... when you come out of a season, you kind of like wake up from something and you're just like, ugh, what was that? So, yeah, you know, that's the irony of it is just like I can't enjoy it or take it all in the moment as much as I would like.
Does the season feel kind of like a blur because you are packing and unpacking and traveling so much?
Yes.
Is I'll that, give you a one you word enjoy?
Answer okay. because most Enough. Of my answers are not.
Do you enjoy the traveling? Is that a positive part of the job? Is that a not-so-positive part of the job?
It depends. The traveling is tiring and annoying in certain ways, but I kind of like it still. I mean, being young-ish still, or not, like, not having kids, and not, you know, I kind of feel like I can, I'm still, like, mobile. I'm not really attached as much to anything, and I can just kind of be wherever. Might as well be here, you know? So sometimes you wake up in the middle of the night and you don't know, like, what city you're in and where you, you know, or whatever, but maybe that's just my problem. It's probably the drugs, but I like it just because I like seeing different places and kind of being in a certain place and being like, I'm in Philadelphia today, you know, looking around. Let's walk down the street and go see what the sidewalks in Philadelphia look like. I don't know.
Yeah, so do you have, what is kind of a game day like, and what's an off day like for you?
This might be embarrassing, but most of them start with waking up, like, in the afternoon, and then...
You sound like I'm my 13-year-old.
I think I am a 13-year-old, but I have kind of this weird thing. I wish I was, like, more of a morning person. I actually like myself better or feel better in general, like in spring training, that month and a half every year, we're getting up at like 6 or 7, 8, you know, whatever. It feels good. You feel like a normal person. This is what normal people do. But in the baseball season, they have day games once or twice a week, maybe. But most of the games are at night, you know, and your peak, especially being in the bullpen, is like 9 p.m., something like that. So I don't know. I don't like getting up at 9 a.m. or 8 a.m. and then being like, yawning and tired and you're like, it's time for bed by the time I'm like supposed to perform or whatever. It just feels kind of strange to me. And I've been able to sleep in. Some people, like, they just can't like sleep past a certain time, you know, whatever. And I kind of wish that I was like that, but I think it kind of works. I don't know, for baseball, we'll see about the rest of my life, but the inconsistency of the schedule is kind of hard. And like, if I had a job or something, I might like that schedule, but this is the way it is now. And so I like wake up and then my breakfast is like at in the mid afternoon or lunch or whatever, and then I go to the field, especially in the major leagues. Even the minor leagues have meals at the stadium for us. So I don't have to really go, you know, some guys like to go to coffee shops in the morning and go out to eat and stuff like that, and I will once in a while, but most of the time I'll just go to the field and eat, and then we'll do all of our prep work and do all the stuff before the game. Like, there's a game every day, so we don't really practice. The practices are, like, before the game. And then...
So that's we'll kind of like warm-ups and...
Yeah,
and
yeah, all the drills, all the, you know, throwing it around, you know, being a kid.
That's all you do. I know, you just sort of throw it around.
Yeah. And then we have the game, and then after the game we'll have more food, and I usually go home and end up, like, watching Shark Tank, or, you know, I like, you know, this probably isn't healthy, but just, like, watching videos on YouTube and stuff, like, whether it's just trash stuff, you know, goofy stuff, mm-hmm. or it's like, I don't know, I like listening to podcasts and just learning about different things. And I, you know, have a couple other interests. I like educational videos on, well, golf. And so not really educational, but
just like, something fully different. Just kind of chill out from baseball.
Yeah, it's my excuse, I will say, is that the baseball is kind of intense and you're kind of on edge and you're focused and all that. So you just want to kind of get out of there and relax. And so on an off day, I'll usually now I try to play golf. Just I really like golf, as you can probably tell. But I'm married now, so got married last year. And if my wife's in town, she'll make me go to a museum or a botanical garden or go out to brunch or something like that, which I actually do enjoy if I can wake up before 3 p.m. So those things are kind of fun, especially in different cities, just checking it out.
So does she just come occasionally, or how do you work that out, being married?
Yeah, she doesn't like me that much, so she doesn't come visit all the time.
Great start to the marriage.
But, you know, they say it gets better with time. But, no, she's a teacher, so she has summers off. Oh. So she usually spends most of her time at home, you know, during the kind of beginning and ends of the season. And then the summertime, she'll come out a little more often. But she does really like life at home, which I don't blame her. I mean, a lot of guys' wives, you know, if they don't work or something, then they just kind of blog and, I don't know, do their hair and makeup and stuff. I'm not, like, saying that that's a bad thing or that's, you know, dumb or anything like that. It's just, like, they kind of have that ability to just be like, I'm just supporting you. I'm just hanging around. And that's a great thing. And Becca, she does that as well as she can, but it's kind of hard for her to, like, be like, I'm just going to leave my life and come hang out in this hotel room and not have anything to do. And I actually like that about her, because I'm like, that's the temperament that I want for the rest of our lives. It's just like right now is like hard, because I would feel this exact same way. I'd be like, what am I doing? I'm just wasting my time here, kind of thing. And like, she does a really good job of supporting me and appreciates that. But for both of us, the lifestyle is difficult, just being apart and not knowing if we're kind of fully committing to like her life and joining me. Like, she's willing to do that, and which is really great, but we're kind of like, should we really like quit your job, come hang out with me in the Econo Lodge, you know, off the freeway in Buffalo, New York, like for a month? As much as I want to be around her all the time, I don't know if that's like the best thing. So it's just, it's one of the aspects of this that is really difficult that, you know, maybe not a lot of people think about when they're trying to decide if they're going to be a professional athlete.
Dreaming of their pro sports career.
Right.
Well, fortunately, there's technology and airplanes and things, you know. It's probably as hard as it was 50 years ago to keep a relationship alive.
That is true. I've heard of airplanes. I actually saw one today. But, the FaceTime is really nice, you know, Zoom, whatever, that's a big thing. I can't imagine the people that, like, who went to war and they didn't see their spouse for 4 years and wrote letters and sent pictures to each other so they remember what they look like and stuff like that. Like, that's kind of crazy to think about. And we complain about FaceTime and, internet connection's bad. Yeah. But, it's just definitely like one of those things where it's like, it's not ideal to be we just got married right before Christmas and then we had like a couple months and then it was like, all right, we're going to be single again for a while, sort of. But she's making the sacrifice for me and I really appreciate that. And then I'm going to have to pay her back later, I think, but it's only fair.
That's the ball player's life.
That's right. So
one thing I've wondered about, did you ever get, like, starstruck by anybody? Were you playing with somebody?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I kind of, for better or worse, sometimes worse, for sure, I'm kind of an unaffected person. Not that means that I'm so whatever that it's nothing's a big deal to me because I'm, you know, this and that. But it's just more like, I think the kind of recognizing how strange, surreal, like finding yourself talking to certain people and being in these environments is definitely something I like try to appreciate. But I don't know, as you can tell, I'm just kind of this, and I just try to treat people like a person and just try to like meet them where they are and where I'm coming from. And just like, if, you know, I'll try not to say anything rude or make you feel bad or something, but I'm just going to like kind of be myself. And I also think like a lot of those people who you would be starstruck by would appreciate it if someone kind of treated them like a normal person. I got a small taste of, a very small taste of that when I would be walking down the street in Toronto or something and somebody came up to me and just was like, hey man, you know, you're doing a good job in the game, whatever, like, do you know how to get to, you know, whatever street, you know, it'd be like, ah, oh, okay, you know, instead of like wanting your picture or something like that. So again, not a ton of that treatment, but a little bit, enough to where I could extrapolate it to how it must feel for somebody who's actually a just slightly larger star than I already am. But
yeah, to kind of being seen as like an object of fascination rather than a person would be
an odd feeling. Mean, that's, you can imagine how celebrities, you know, why they're always like dressed weird with the sunglasses and with, you know, and I don't, I think there's a lot of self-inflicted stuff like that, but a lot of times it's like, why are these people so strange? It's because you're making them strange, you know, because I remember one of my teammates would talk about the elevator conversation where it's basically like you have 30 seconds where whatever you do in this interaction is what they're going to remember and talk about for the rest of their life, meeting you, and you might, you know, your wife might be in the hospital and you're like, I don't have time to, you know, and what a jerk that guy was. And it's like, so, it's a good problem to have if you're in that position, but still, it's like an aspect of it that is definitely different than a normal person's experience, that anonymity is, becomes the, like, big celebrity, or, like, a couple of my teammates that I've had, or, like, a way bigger celebrity, like, that's kind of their, like, most precious asset, if they can have it.
That privacy. You don't realize how special it is until it's gone.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Joe, thank you. Thanks for all your time. And
thank you.
Your good humor and sharing your experiences with me. It's really been a pleasure for me.
Well, I haven't spoken to another person in a few days, so it's nice to get this chance.
So basically, I could have put my dog up here and that, well, that's not a person, but I could have put my kids up. Anyone.
Could have barked at each other. But yeah, I just a crazy, crazy life, and you just try to stay sane while you're in it and appreciate it and try not to have too many regrets when you're done.
It sounds like you're making the most of it.
Well,
it's an interesting journey.
That's true, yeah.
Well, thank you.
Well, thank you.
As you can probably tell, Joe kept me laughing. But he also got me thinking a lot. I appreciate Joe's down-to-earth perspective. We're just a bunch of grown-ups playing a game, running around playing ball with stains on our knees. And also his willingness to open up about his emotions and his struggles along the way. Even though very few of us will ever be professional athletes, I think we can all learn a lot from Joe's journey. Here are some of my takeaways. Number 1. Don't let other people's opinions form your own opinions of your abilities or your worth. Think about it. The one guy on the college team who was deemed just a guy who plays baseball is the only one who made it to the majors. 2. Try to appreciate what you're in while you're in it, and enjoy the moments. 3. Keep things in perspective. If people around you are trading in fancy watches or expensive cars for upgrades just because, it might be time for a reality check. Remember what's really important. 4. Turn negative comments or energy into motivation. 5. Treat each person like a person, no matter the level of notoriety. And finally, number 6. Take advantage of your circumstances. focus on the positives rather than the negatives. For example, traveling a lot for work may be tiring, but at least you can explore new cities or botanical gardens. A huge thanks to Joe Biagini for sharing his experiences with me. If you haven't yet listened to the first part of our interview, you can go to our website, theexperiencepodcast.net, and find it and all of our past episodes on the homepage. You can also find out how to follow us on social media and sign up for our newsletter there. If you're enjoying this podcast, please tell some friends about it. I'm Elizabeth Pearson Garr. Thanks for joining The Experience.